This audio is a recording of a RAG meeting on new media and social media held June 14, 2010 in Shermanwood Spree. It looks at the uses and dangers of new media and the possibilities for positive change and radical democracy via the internet. This is part two of the talk. You'll find part one on indiemedia.ie as article 97029.
And Vanessa, our final speaker.
Okay, I have to say I'm not in any way political. I watch the news, but I don't write about it on my blog. I leave that to people who actually want to get out there and do stuff. What I kind of write about is what goes on with me, my radio shows, reviews, bands I work with, stuff like that. I guess how I got involved with all the online thing was really, I've been working in the music industry for 13, 14 years or something. And about 7 years ago, the online thing really kind of kicked in. I was working with a band and we really needed to get an online presence to get international notice. And I basically sat down one weekend and made a website. I hadn't a clue how to do it, just kind of went online and found a few tutorials. There wasn't even YouTube videos or anything, so it was literally how to step one, two, three. So it kind of worked really well. I was working with a couple of bands, working out the best ways to, you know, write their bios so the search terms would come up and give them higher Google rankings and search term rankings and what have you. Worked really well for one band in particular. What I found was working with bands, it doesn't really have to, just because I worked with bands, it works for, I think, any artist really. But what I found was that certain acts, shall we say, had reached a level and they were just happy to stay at that. They didn't want to push it any more. Like they managed to get a half decent online presence and, oh yeah, we got a top 20 hit in Ireland or we got a top 30 hit in Ireland. And it was like, for God's sake, it's Ireland. Like, you know, you have to push it a little bit more. But the one act that we worked together and we went really well, they got a couple of worldwide licensing deals. We got a playlist all over the world. We got playlisted in Sydney. We got playlisted on Indie 103 in LA. You know, there was loads of stuff like that happening. And it worked really, really well. And after that, it was kind of... I did some work with Sophie B. Hawkins as well. And I don't know if any of you know Sophie. She was nominated for a Grammy in 1992. And she had a big row with Sony because basically Sony wouldn't do any promotion for her. She had to pay for her own promotion. She managed to get her own masters back for her third album. And she was doing some independent stuff. And I basically said, right, I'll give you a hand. So we asked MCD and Aiken and all the nice people if, you know, they'd give us a hand promoting. And they said they'd give us €1,000 at the time for her to come over and do a weekend of gigs. So we said, nah, we'll do it ourselves, thanks. And it was really these two incidents that, I suppose for me, it was just a major, major wake-up point. Like, Sophie did a gig in Cork. I just basically went on websites, forums. It was really before the social network thing took off. But it was basically forums and trying to plug things and get people interested. And I never even put up a poster in Cork and the thing was sold out. And it just showed that if you got the right angle, you knew the market that you were going for, you could actually push it really well. So it was from that then, I went back to college and I'm doing multimedia. And the whole thing, I think, the new media and old media and the technologies, you have to blend the whole lot for it to make any sense, if you ask me anyway. Like, if you look at any of the news stories, whether you're a blogger or what you write about, it doesn't really matter. But if you look at any of the news stories, you're going to have everything covered in newspapers, websites. You're going to have it on 24-hour TV, Twitter. You're going to hear about it first on Twitter. But you expect to see it on everything, even though the newspapers are going to, there's going to be a delay in what you read. You know, you're going to see it on everything, and you're expecting that. And that's probably one of the reasons Barack Obama got in as well. He was probably the first person to be able to run a campaign across all these platforms pretty well. One of the things that lately has really come to the front is while Twitter is great, I love Twitter, I adore Twitter. I was very disappointed when 8,500 tweets disappeared from my account today. But there's sometimes official journalist type people tend to tweet things before checking their sources and things like that, and it makes the online thing a little bit dubious, as it's taking people a little bit longer to actually trust what they see on these sites, and it has to come from an official source first. Basically, because if with the newspaper, I think it is because people have time to check their sources and things like that. Whereas if it's online, if something happens, you can have the story online 10 minutes later. But there's one of the things that I think blogging especially has, you know, only forced, like Gaza and Iran last year, there's a complete media blockout, and only for those that were blogging and tweeting, there's no other way that we'd know anything about it. And in the West, if we want to call us here in the West, I think we're pretty much taking all this stuff for granted now. And there are still many parts of the world that are struggling to get to the level that we're at. I think Ireland especially is, it's not too far behind the States, but I think it's pretty much ahead of a lot of Europe and a lot of other countries in how we look at these things. I suppose it's because we like talking, we like tea, so we just sit around and talk. But it's the same kind of thing on these social networks, that we all come together and, you know, have a chat basically. There's with the how things are going to develop, I think with all these is, it's quite interesting, but I think again the corporations have they're going to have the final say. Like you have your new iPads, and you can watch, well, you can't watch RT News on, because it's all on Flash player, and iPads don't support Flash, so that's a major issue. Like, what are they going to do? I was talking on Twitter to what's his name, John McMahon from 2FM the other day, and he was like, why should we change just for him? But if they don't change, they're going to lose out, you know, a significant amount of viewers, online viewers. Same with Facebook. I don't know if any of you have read Accidental Billionaires. I finished reading it about 2-3 weeks ago, and there's a few things I'd recommend actually when I'm thinking of it. If you're into the whole techie kind of social thing, there's a guy called Leo Laporte. I love Leo Laporte. He's not too serious. He has a website called twit.tv, but they have a series of podcasts of, they stream live stuff all the time, but they're pretty good podcasts. They're basically in the know tech journalists. They have a panel discussion every Sunday night, and it's really good to get the knowledge as it's happening, so you're not, you know, waiting on whatever. But one of the things I think that came across from Accidental Billionaires and from other people talking about Mark Zuckerberg, the guy that founded Facebook, is that this guy does not give a fuck about anybody. He just seems to be so driven that he doesn't care about anybody. The amount of people that he has pissed off in business getting to where he is, like, he has just lost friends all over the place. Even the guy that put up the money originally, he just, like, wrote him out. He didn't care. He got his solicitors to, you know, reduce his share value or something, whatever legal way to do it, and they just got rid of him. He doesn't really care. Somebody asked him something at a conference last week, and he couldn't answer it. He just started sweating, and, like, they started making excuses that was too hot for him to answer the question. Bullshit, like. This guy does not care. One of the things, as I said, I love Twitter and all these other things, YouTube, whatever, and as somebody who's returned to college and I'm trying to make a kind of, I suppose, an inroad in a new career, I use all these things because I make videos, I do radio shows, we use podcasts, you know, everything comes together. So I suppose my blog or website or whatever, it's almost like a central hub that everything, you know, connects to, and that everybody knows where you can find it. But the stuff with Facebook is just gone so bad. I mean, people, it's all right if we're here and we know that these privacy settings are a certain way. To Joe Soap on the street, who hasn't got a clue, who really just signed up so they can keep in touch with the people who went to school with 40 years ago, they haven't a clue. They don't read them. They really don't read them. And the way they're set up, it really should, it's opposite to the way it should be. Like, everything public. To be quite honest with you, because I blog and I review them on the radio and stuff like that, I just took all my personal details off it and I made it public. Because I hate the fact that you have to try and figure out who's going to find you and who's not. So anything that's really important doesn't go on Facebook anymore. And the way it is, as you were saying earlier, if there is anything that you don't want getting out there, you just can't put it on the internet. Somebody's going to find it somewhere. It's just so easy to, it's so easy to find anything about anybody. It's just ridiculous. Anything from where you were, like on Twitter, like 2 weeks ago. That's the one thing about Twitter that I'm liking a lot, is that they only have searches that last 2 weeks in the past. So after 2 weeks, they haven't bothered, you know, they haven't bothered archiving them or whatever. Now, another issue, Twitter has 190 million users, but more people on Facebook use Farmville, which is a bit strange and weird. But then at the same time, it's hard to know what way Facebook is going to go, because Zynga, the company that make Farmville and all these other things, they're, you know, you can buy all these virtual farms and you can do all this kind of stuff with real money. I don't know why the hell anybody would bother.
Can you explain that a little bit?
All right, Farmville is basically an application. It's like an online game within that you access through Facebook, and you build farms and you can buy yourself with real money. You go in, you sow your crops and reap your crops and all this kind of stuff, and if you're not happy with the length of time it takes, you can win with real money, and you can buy yourself like a barn, or you can buy yourself a tractor or whatever the hell it is. Like, I don't know why anybody would bother doing but Zynga, the company that make all these, they obviously get a cut, or Facebook get a cut, or whatever way it works out. But Facebook didn't make money for, I don't even know, I think it was only last September they started breaking even. But one of the big things now that they're faced with is that Zynga are talking about pulling away completely. So they're taking Farmville off completely, which they reckon will take a third of the revenue away from Facebook. So it's hard to know what way it goes, but for artists, let's say, trying to get their work out there, you kind of have to be on Facebook, because that's where everybody is, that's where people find out their stuff. But thankfully it hasn't got to the level where MySpace was, where you were just there was so much drivel, you know. If one of the bad things, I suppose, about technologies and all that is the ease of which people can make music or can make videos or whatever. It was your brother was doing the thing with Mark Romanek last year.
Yeah.
And Mark said that he hated the fact that anybody could get a camera and go out and just do it, because the passion isn't there with people anymore. And it's the same with music or with anything. There's no quality control. So people are making loads and loads of content, but there's no quality control on what they're actually doing. So there's just tons and tons of stuff going on. Like every minute, there's about, I think it's like 20 hours of footage that goes up on YouTube every minute. Like, how are you supposed to watch that? It's never going to be out there. So it's, while it's easier to get information to people and to, you know, a worldwide audience, it's making sure that your quality, and that, you know, if you're going to be involved in trying, if somebody's going to have to try and get you through a search engine, you know, just even having your little search terms, it's making such more, I don't know, more of a difference than it's like it was 5 or 6 years ago again, because there's so much crap. It's gone back to the MySpace stage, where like so many people I don't know how many people had MySpace accounts. I had, and I just closed them. I think there's one still there. But I had so many friends. I didn't even know them. Like, you know, you're getting requests about gigs from all over the place or art events that are happening in the other side of the planet. You're never going to see them. You don't know who these people are. And it just turns out that it was complete spam from companies then, you know, just trying to sell you stuff. Which again brings you back to the one thing that I found. I've had to do essays and come up with stats and all this kind of crap for all these topics when I'm doing my degree, and the one thing that I keep finding, that everything keeps coming back full circle on each other. So if you start off talking about one thing, it always comes back to it. Like, we were talking about Buzz and Gmail, and even Gmail scanning your emails. The adverts that come up beside your email, it's like big coincidence. You're talking about sore toe and you get like an ad for toe bandage or something, you know. You know, it's just remarkable how much information that everybody can still get, even though you might, Facebook might be public, but where else is it getting your information from? It's sometimes it's really, really scary, and I think sometimes you're better off not even thinking about it. So, I don't know.
Thank you.
I should go.
Question. It's actually just more, I think the discussion is very relevant and very interesting, and it seems like it's almost the idea of putting forward oppositional views, in that there's like the pernicious globalized business of the internet or Web 2.0, which I think is an extremely valid and very scary point. And then the illusory opposition to that is that it's also a vastly useful tool in terms of both marketing and self-promotion, but maybe you're not such a promotory, but a creative force in terms of conversation, speech, and getting music and people out there. And that's put as an opposition almost. I don't think things necessarily have to be oppositionary. They're more like, again, symmetrical or asymmetric. They're coexistence rather than oppositional. And maybe it is just like, it's really good that discussions like this happen about those things coexisting in the world as we kind of enter into it or interact on this level. And maybe it's more beholden onto us to radicalise that, to radicalise the possibilities within it, so that we can radicalise the creative outpouring, so we know that it's viewed by millions and it's owned by people that we never see, and it's owned by corporations that we have literally no control over, but by participation in a very positive way, it is counteracting the puerile shit that comes out. And the only way you can actually, not so much counteract, you coexist with it. And the only way you're going to mobilize something in terms of puerility that goes on is to interact and kind of do that. The difficulty in the globalized internet, as I can see, or the globalized business, that it's so hard to even kind of get a grasp on who owns what, because it's not a who or what, it's corporate identities that are the new empire around the world. But how do we get access to those networks? Because the illusion that we have access to those networks is, again, is the facade on the front of it. And I don't know if anybody would have any idea how to gain access to those literal digital, physical, technological networks or networks of ownership.
Well, networks owned by organizations,
exactly.
Corporations.
Or else is that like, do you have to radicalize it to a point where you say, right, I'm going to do it.
Networks, right, or for example, with the anarchist, if I'm taking that as an example, then he feels he can take ownership of those spaces to have a radical kind of conversation on it. Is that true?
I'd more say it's a bit like if you're publishing a Vatican newspaper and you get Eason's to carry it. You don't own Eason's because Eason's are carrying your newspaper.
But
you know.
Eason's don't go through your newspaper page by page so that you can, like, they don't say, ah, oh, here's some guy putting in a newspaper. That's great. I'm going to, like, make sure that the BMW factory in Germany ultimately keeps going with nothing putting in these newspapers, because I'm just going to keep generating consumerist desires through them continually putting stuff through my shops. You know what I mean? That's what I kind of think happens with Facebook. You know, it's just a space for, like, desire. Instead of, like, going out and cloaking yourself in the Nike and Adidas stuff, really, obviously, you're going out into these spaces and you're cloaking yourself in digital clutter that defines you as a subject within consumer society. So you're putting on your videos, on your likes, on your whatever on you to make you into this other thing that asks for product to be generated for you. you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So that's why I have a problem with it. As a rapport, when I see anarchist groups and stuff on it, I have a problem with it as a whole, because I go, this whole thing is about backing up capital, essentially. And it's very subtle. It's like beyond the fact that you can't understand, I even think the crazy things are very hard to understand as a lawyer. And beyond the fact that like, they're hard to see what's going on, I just think it's a whole kind of smoke and mirrors operation that people don't see, like, not just the privilege, but this is actually being used to generate more and more desire and more buying stuff, essentially. So within that thing, how does alternative politics work?
Mark, and then Barrett, if you want to contribute as well.
Well, I just kind of maybe deposit rather than the, like, I kind of wonder, is the success of Facebook beyond just the sort of space where politicals exist, where people sort of network? We made the point about, you know, it's a kind of social network, but where's the socialism in it?
Yeah.
Like, I wonder, is that a reaction to two generations of very successful neoliberalism, where the discourse has been shaped by the mainstream media, where in fact society no longer exists? We're told that we're individuals as consumers, but also individuals with no real connect with the world around us, and the sort of relative to that, the sort of precarity and the flexible workforce that we've all kind of lived through, the absolute decimation of communities where they have traditionally existed, and our own sense of ourselves does spaces like network or like Facebook not become so popular because it's an attempt to recreate a form of society?
Can I just come back to it quickly before I forget it? Is that like, you know, so you have this thing where, in a lot of ways, there's this kind of radical thought that went, let's get the network going, let's get the rhizome going, like whatever, as a reaction to Margaret Thatcher and whatever, society of individuals, neoliberalism. But has it not been the case that the network has been taken and put at the service of capitalism now by putting it into, you know, the network offered a lot of possibilities, but the network that's Facebook's network, owned by a corporation, is no longer a radical network. It's definitely not the network that, it's definitely not the thing that P2P, you know, activists would speak about or something like that. It's a different, it's a controlled network.
I think there's a way of engaging it, though, like, with the comments, with a sort of analysis that you realise what it is, and you try to use the benefits that you might get from it in terms of organising different things. But you realise the limitations, you realise the ownership, and you're coming at it with a sort of a fairly open eye of what it's about. And I mean, it shouldn't be the only space where people are attempting to organise. Organising happens in the streets and people's real lives, but if you kind of look at it as just simply a tool, you know where the pitfalls potentially are, and in that process, you're probably trying to educate about that as well.
Yeah, so I guess about achieving the right balance on it or something like that.
It's choosing how you interact with
it. Sorry, we just put up our hands. Barry, did you want to?
Yeah, it's just a bit of Facebook there, and I was just wondering, you know, with Creative Commons and stuff like that, where you upload an image to Facebook or whatever, it's therefore like the property of the corporation that's hosting it. But when it comes to like Creative Commons, like if you make music or videos on Facebook, like do they therefore own the intellectual property rights? So,
I think you're the IP lawyer, so you're the best informed.
Yeah, I don't know what the terms are.
But I think, speaking from a content perspective anyway, like it's my duty to have read the terms and conditions of Facebook. That's the reality. You know, that's what I haven't.
But I'm a lawyer, like, and I've read them, though, and I think they're really smoking.
I never upload anything to Facebook that I'm not comfortable with the idea of them owning.
But it's not actually uploading it, but if you link something.
No, they don't own it. If you link.
But you don't have the ownership to grant them, but you just give them a very, as far as I recall, and they tweak it around a lot, is that you just give them a very broad license to do whatever with your stuff.
That was a big thing with MySpace. It was one of the downfalls of the first big thing that led to its downfall, was that they changed their terms and conditions. And basically, what it was that they could just use your stuff for whatever they wanted.
With MySpace.
But
is that
again,
how it is now?
I don't know, because I haven't been on it in a long time. But at the end of the day, if they're going to use it in an ad to, you know, whatever, on TV or whatever, you're still going to get the royalties out of it. They have to give you the royalties. So you're not going to lose out that much, really. You're going to get your music out there or whatever it is.
At the end of the day,
I think there's nuances there on that. But I think what's interesting is, people will be arguing this room about what happens if I put my stuff up there, like, and you know, they take the rights to it. And then at the same time, within these networks, there's a complete devaluation of intellectual property. It's a bad word. But, you know, the question remains, who gets paid? You know, if you can give out about Facebook taking the rights to your stuff, but then you can share somebody else's stuff and not give a shit, you know. So it's
the thing is about Gmail, reading your emails, it's a computer doing. With Gmail and with, for example, Facebook owning your property, I mean your intellectual property, first time they ever misuse that grossly will be the end of you know them. Mm-hmm. And you know, having worked in marketing for a couple of years back in the day, I mean, we did work where we were looking for information from people all the time, and every time we talked to people, or every time there was some kind of communication or opportunity to get a little bit more information about somebody, you would take it, and the reason we were taking it was because we'd want to communicate with that person a little bit more relevantly to themselves. And again, you know, when you look at what Google does with Gmail in terms of the ads that they'll base on content of your email, that's really what they're doing. And you know, I think to turn that around and make that into a Big Brother thing is somewhat, I think it's still somewhat past the mark. It might be kind of like a different opinions.
There's a few people who want to, there's lots of people thankfully who want to contribute, and so I think the best way to do it is that if everybody puts up their hands, and then I'll invite you to speak, including our guest speakers. Cool. So Reddy, you had your hand up, do you still want
I just think that there's one, basically the way conversations have been framed is between networks, individuals, and corporations. We're talking about social networks, so what's misused is swarm, which is what happens when we come together on social networks and sort of act like bees. Just to pick up on Andrew's stuff, we organise in the workplace on Facebook, and the boss catches on, a swarm that's organised in the workplace, we lead through one hyperlink to a Linux alternative to Facebook if you wanted to contain that workplace network, for instance. I mean, the technology itself doesn't necessarily carry any real kind of nefarious kind of demeanor about itself. It's a control around it that basically determines whether it's forced or whether legal in a sense. That's what we're speaking up on.
Yeah, but the control is corporate control, right?
It is corporate control, but I mean, that doesn't limit us from using aspects of subverting it and kind of reversing that relationship.
Yeah,
mine their intelligence as much as they mine ours for our benefit.
Yeah, and I know that you guys will have a pretty savvy idea of it. I'm just kind of throwing the thing out there, but I think that the point is that but you guys are going to be well aware of its benefits and downfalls and stuff like that. So it's going to be like for the bulk of the users of those media, they're not aware.
We do have examples of people doing that en masse, like for instance with MySpace, around copyright. I mean, I've always said people MySpace may own copyright in your track if you upload it, but it's a shit 80 kilobyte version of the track. It's not really much use, and they don't want the masters on it because they don't have the hard drive. So people have probably taken away from MySpace, SoundCloud, and Mixcloud, which are more sort of user-friendly communities. So there's already examples of people moving from sites in mass swarms because they've decided that we don't like this corporate control environment, be it Bebo,
yeah,
that's
right,
the way it's going. So, I mean, Facebook...
There's an alternative to Facebook. What was
the
other one?
Can you kickstart the website that kind of allows you to look for microfunding people? I think it was last month or the month before there was MIT? Some MIT students came together and they said, listen, we've got an idea for an open source social network.
The Diaspora, isn't it?
Just a second, just if you could put up your hands so that everybody gets a chance to speak.
Set one up and it's in the pipeline.
Maybe an alternative to Facebook.
I mean, just in terms of where's the socialism within the social network, I mean, something else has been missing actually has been the social network, Firebase, digital commons, sort of dot communism, that sort of notion that while capitalism extracts value from us, I mean, what sort of value are we all extracting from it on our hard drives? What does that add to discussion around about, more or less creating digital communism? I know that I've got 200 gigs of music at home that I haven't paid for.
At the same time, people are still arguing. I think there's great areas now. I mean, I didn't go into the comments one because I have done it before. I thought you guys would have had a lot of discussions about it.
Points for how do you support artists and producers and so on.
Yeah.
Well, we're not all just living online. I know that I would go support my mates' gigs if I downloaded their tracks, they buy t-shirts and so on. And then there's other examples like ClaraGarvey.net, where you've got top two reels, No Bollywood, No Hollywood, and you've just got thousands and thousands of pages of people coming together, creating subtitles for rare Chinese artist films. You'll never get to day without these social networks being in existence. I'm not presenting a techno-utopian version of this technology or what for them. you know, what role it offers, is there salvation or anything like that at all, but I think there's just a few kind of things being missing there, and that's basically this forum for
Yeah. Thanks for that, Reggie. We'll take Angela first to comment on that, and then Claire, you have a separate question.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I only really talked about YouTube, but actually I would kind of share your views a bit about Facebook and about social networking in general. And, you know, as soon as it's not useful to us anymore, we will leave and we'll find something better. But also, I kind of wonder about how you were saying it was kind of smoke and mirrors and subtle and all this kind of stuff. And I think I do think of Facebook as this kind of like scary, you know, like really elaborate, probably the most elaborate market research project ever. But sometimes I wonder about that too, because, you know, the ads that appear on the right-hand column on my page, the one recently was a holiday in Dublin 1. I live right across the road. So it was sophisticated enough to know that I live there, but it wasn't sophisticated enough to understand that that's precisely why I would never have a holiday there, you know? I've never bought a thing on Facebook. The things that they advertise to me are terribly marketed towards me. It's really not sophisticated at all.
But I think that's part of the thing, is that people go, I've never bought a thing on Facebook, how would they be monetizing off me? But that's not how they're supporting this, you know what I mean? They're data mining and sending on stuff to third parties. So if they're out there a little bit, I don't know, I think it's...
But they're way off, though. The ads are way off. The closest thing I saw was one time there was something to do at 30 Rock, because they had posted a quote from 30 Rock. Beyond that, I mean, they're not even anywhere near close to what I would ever buy. And I just think, surely they'd be able to do better than that.
But it's not just about those ads. It's about building profiles of consumer interest and stuff like that, and selling them on to companies outside of Facebook, mm-hmm. not just the ones sending stuff to you.
Can we have Claire here? Just a really quick comment to that question that I think I'll probably direct to you, because you might know the answer.
Hopefully.
One of the questions I don't like, nobody really talked about, like, new media. It's not always someone who's trying to organise some really worthy political activity, but often it's an awful lot about, like, consuming mass amount of crappy and shitty information, just getting more and more, and you're not really retaining any of it, and it's almost like an addiction. And then also, because of the ease and the freedom of how you can access it, sometimes the only limit is like the ego of the person that's creating this new media. And that wasn't brought up, but I think it's kind of just interesting to consider. And then this is something I've actually, like, I've asked you, Andrew, a good bit about before, is Google Analytics as a search or a web stats tool. And it's just becoming, it's on everything, and it's being used, I know, on government websites, and as far as I know, the commissioner, the data commissioner, people go, like, yeah, use it, just include a bit this sentence in your disclaimer on your website, but otherwise go ahead and use it, no problem, it's free, that's what we want, we've got no money. And just I have a lot of concerns over that, like, so it's just, I suppose it's not really all about new media, but it is, because you're accessing whatever you want from this whole array of government departments' websites, and some of them are, and probably be more and more now that we've got permission to put it off these websites. Google Analytics, who own the data of us, are, you know, we're accessing things that are provided by the state and paid for by our taxpayers' money.
To a private corporation.
Yeah.
I find it problematic as well.
Yeah. But it's, like, no one, it's huge, like,
no.
Yeah, there doesn't need to be alternative.
Just can I ask, you know, for people, do you guys have a Facebook group page for Jump Street? Yeah.
And right.
And have you ever looked at the analytics for it? No.
I haven't.
You have
ever
looked
at it? No. Show was just a person, so it's not like a page.
All right. Well, if you had a page, for example, for Jump Street, you'd be able to actually go and understand, you know, who people are actually interested in Jump Street are. You'd be able to understand what age they were. You'd be able to understand the breakdown of males and females, where they're living in Ireland, and all that kind of stuff. And you can't deny that's useful. Again, obviously I'm not countering that point, but I'm just saying that, you know, these technologies are really positive in a way, you know, because they do allow you to communicate better with people who are interested in what you're talking about.
But isn't that, sorry, I can't remember his name, so it depends on how you interact with the mediums, and given the problematics of the ownership, the globalised business, etc., you can mobilise positive ways to do that. But that's if you do so consciously and responsibly and with, I guess, optimally kind of a mass of people on the same, literally the same conscious level that are there for kind of a wide in a certain sense, and there for a house possibility, but it doesn't in any way kind of detract from the other shit that's happening around.
Yeah, well, you'd hope that it's something.
I think it's a, they're not, again, for me, they're not oppositional, they just coexist, and that coexistence is problematic and maybe like a lot of things. Yeah.
And I think you have to look at what they're doing at a macro level. Like, it's all very well to say, I'm on there and I know I've kind of got a balanced approach to it. Say, for example, if you guys were on Andrew, right, and you say, I have a balanced approach, I know I've weighed it up, this is cool, but what you're actually supporting is this giant fucking tool of empire that's like operating transnationally, and it's not an essence, do you know what I mean?
But there is no outside of empire. That's the problem, basically. I mean, there is no other place you can go where, so, you know, you go and live up the top of a hill and not communicate with anybody. But then there are some people who live on the top of the hill and don't communicate with anybody. If we actually, if what you're about is actually trying to change the global setup, then you do need to use whatever tools that are there in order to reach people at a, you know, local level, but also at a global level. And I think the attraction of, say, I think Facebook actually is, it's quite interesting. It's both something that's amazingly fucked, and, you know, Zuckerberg or whatever, like the completely immoral approach to data privacy and things. Which I think does matter, but it's also something that is remaking social relations, like the way people see each other, the way they project who they are. Like, I think people are talking about, you know, oh, people are just projecting this consumer desire, blah blah blah. I think most people actually, if you look at what they do on Facebook, that's not what they do. You know, they don't very often post, hey, I've just bought this handbag, or, you know, whatever. There's not that much actual, in terms of what people put up, there's not that much commercial operation. What they do is they try and construct a picture of how they want to be seen. Now, I don't think that's radically different from what they do in a pub on a Friday night, but it's an entirely new tool for people to do that. And it's got a much bigger reach, and that, I think it's actually going to have quite a profound effect on society in general because of that. And it's, like, a lot of what I'm saying here is that in itself this is neither negative nor positive. This is just where we live. This is what's happening around us. And approaching it as an activist and as a revolutionary, the question to me really is, well, okay, that's what's happening. What's possible to do within that space? You know, the marketing stuff is great on the one hand. It's really interesting information. But on the other hand, if you're doing stuff that the state doesn't particularly like, the fact that all this data is constantly being gathered, that you can look up and see who the friends of Sean Mistry are exactly, you can get a little picture of all of them, you know, you can find out whereabouts in Dublin they live, that's also, you know, potentially not such a great thing.
So maybe it's just not like the right forum for Sean Mistry.
So Liz, next, is it Liz?
I was wondering, like, we talked a lot about organizing anarchists in Ireland in new media, but I was wondering, like, how you guys organized online before Facebook, other than just the websites, because I know I'm from Boston, and a lot of the more radical groups there organized with websites like RiseUp.net and sort of, like, older technologies still, because I know a bunch of groups there have really, really limited Facebook presences where, like, people wouldn't even know they existed. And, like, so where were you guys before you were on Facebook? Anything that, now knowing some of the flaws with Facebook, do you still kind of, like, regress back to those older ones ever, or no?
There's a load of other stuff I'm involved in doing that's not that sort of social network related. Things like anarchismo.net, it's a website, we do a blog, you know, still people use mailing lists. Like, there's a whole profusion of other things. I think the reason that people are also using Facebook now is not because it's a good way of connecting with the people you already know, because those people tend to be on an email list already, but that it's a good way of reaching people who you wouldn't necessarily come across. And in fact, one thing I'd say is that in terms of talking about the advertising, if you run any sort of page at all, you can go and start setting up an ad and sort of get an idea of exactly how it works. But, like, one of the things when I was doing the book fair, I was playing around with an ad for that, and so I discovered that there were, I think, 650,000 Facebook users within 50 kilometres of Dublin, or people who've created an account who knows how regularly they use them. And I think 500 of those describe themselves as either anarchists or say they're interested in anarchism in profile. And you can actually keep doing that and then get a breakdown by age and all sorts of stuff like that. But the interesting, I mean, I think the useful thing is that ability to, you know, you put something up, somebody joins it, somebody sees they've joined it, and they join it as well, and then somebody three steps removed sees that as well. And your only other way normally of reaching that sort of person is by putting up posters or by giving out leaflets or whatever. And for most groups, that's a really, really limited resource. So I don't think Facebook replaces the kind of older mailing list type things on Rise Up. And those things, they're not secure, but they're a little bit more secure. But what it's about is outreach. It's about that ability to talk to a much larger audience than you would be able to do otherwise.
So you think maybe it's important to like have a Facebook page up, but not necessarily as a group exist on Facebook, like maybe have your less public email list and then just like have a Facebook page up that people can like if they want, but then like have conversations elsewhere. Like I know like some like bands even though like MySpace isn't most effective, this will have a MySpace page up and then be like, oh, go here instead. So like maybe it would be a better idea like have a Facebook page up that say, oh, if you really want to talk to us, go here instead.
Angela was speaking to that. I mean, using Rag as an example, we have a Facebook account, but we have an internal site where we communicate with each other and we use that to share minutes and videos and do everything pretty much.
This lady here?
Yeah, it's actually just a question given addressed to you, Andrew, and just because you are, you know, saying explicitly politically active in, using incorrect term, real life situations, but looking to change political situations in real world, and maybe you don't subject to the same level to say the global or the way the internet or Facebook owners are organized on that level. But if you do, what way would you see it being possible to counteract that political organization or to counteract that? Or do you think there's a possibility somehow?
Well, I'd love it if something like Appleseed, which is it's another sort of open source social networking project, took off. I think the compromise again with Facebook, the reason why people use it is because there is 450 million people on it. And I actually have an account on Appleseed, and I think there's probably about 3,000 people on that or something at the moment. So it's kind of quite useful for talking to other people who like that sort of stuff, but it's not very useful for, you know, reaching out to the people around. So the internet, one of the nice things about it is it's not a single space, you know, and there's different uses you can put to different spaces in it. I think using Facebook is very contradictory because of what it is and because of all the information it collects. But on balance, you know, providing you're sensible about the way you're using it, you're getting more out of it. I'm just talking about political organisation here, then you're giving away.
Can I come in here? Just a question for Vanessa. You said something that for me is quite controversial in terms of mentioning quality control and a compromise in quality and the dirge of different levels of quality of stuff and produce and whatever on the internet. And I'm really interested, somebody touched on it before in terms of like suggesting possibly introducing an editor to regulate comments on places like YouTube or whatever, but in terms of artistic produce or music or whatever else, writing for example, how would you actually suggest that might be done without compromising accessibility for everybody?
I think the problem, is, as I was saying, that there's so many people who don't think about what they actually put up, that it's really, really hard for people who have a message, or have whatever is, you know, whatever art form they have, to get their work, shall we say, out there. As it stands, you still have to seemingly go through the same routes, but it's almost like if something takes off, you know, like a viral video or something like that, and it gains almost a cult status. That's probably one way of, you know, the cream will rise. Eventually, I think whatever it is, if it's something that's good enough, the cream will rise on. But unfortunately, there's still 90% of the stuff that's out there is crap. I don't know if anybody...
It's funny, you know, the photographer David LaChapelle was in town last year, and I heard somebody ask him, you know, do you think, but now that everybody has cameras, you know, can take, you know, really amazing pictures with very low-cost cameras, you know, do you think that's the death of photography? And he just said, man, there's been pens around for centuries. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's like a really key point. It's like, just because the technology is there to create a video doesn't mean that you're going to be able to make the next, you know,
I agree.
Like you say, when
but
the green one does rise.
If there's like one, if for every minute there's 20 hours of YouTube, nobody's going to be able to watch it all. Ever.
But I mean, I don't think the idea is ever that you watch it all. It's that if one person will watch it and they'll share it with
and they'll share,
person,
yeah.
They'll share it.
So it's like the viral thing. I think that's probably the only way that things are going to make any headway for the foreseeable future anyway.
Can I just give a point on the information thing that's really interesting? Is that in the last 30 years, more information has been produced in the world than in the last 5,000 years.
Ready?
Yeah, so just one other thing that's kind of been overlooked is basically the amount of one-page labour people are doing.
Yeah.
Which you probably like to into, mm-hmm. That's like just produce, say, music, art, writing, or whatever for the internet, and how that kind of sort of ties into the labour market. Like, I mean, if you go to, I don't know, you know, anyone who's working in film or art or media or whatever, like, just the amount of output to do, how exposed they are online, and just how open that is to employers actually checking them out. So I suppose having worked for as an intern for free for a year or something like that, basically your whole life is turned into an internship, as such, like, where everything you've done can be tracked, and so on. Like, stuff like sound plays and illustrations after music producers, where it's like, you know, like, casting made tracks or shit, but people can see the evolution of individual tracks and stuff. But I mean, that kind of notion of, like, you know, everything you do on social networks being
permanent
CV, I think is...
I just think that...
do you
want to
make a
direct response? Yeah, exactly. Just, you know, you have to find new models, though. Like, Owen, for example, in Nessie, or who you mentioned earlier on, my brother is a director, and he went to a film school, Werner Herzog, in LA in January, and actually went out there and said to people, listen, if you've watched my videos and my films and you've enjoyed it, I'd really appreciate it if you make a donation to my fund.
Mm-hmm.
And from $5 from this person to $5 from that person, he got, like, 2,000 euros to go. And he's also doing that now at the moment for feature film funding. So along with, you know, the challenges it presents in terms of monetizing your content, it also delivers other ways to fund it. You know, we just have to look for them and think about new ways, I think.
Angela, and then Vanessa.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I had to write a piece about Hardy Books for Film Ireland, and they're a really interesting case in point, because they started out, I think they made maybe one or two episodes, and then they got this deal with RTE where they were given $8,000 per episode. So they were already kind of popular before they started, but they became really popular through Storyland. So they were making these really cheap documentaries. They had, like, incredibly simple just camera and sound, and editing it themselves. All their friends were the actors, you know, they were just locals. When the competition was over and they had made their whatever it was, 6 episodes, that was the end of that, and they were just sort of left there by RTE. And what has happened since is basically they've kind of petered out, and, you know, I mean, they were really brilliant for what they were able to do. I mean, it was so cheap, and, you know, if you look at the early comedy efforts of, like, people who went on to be really brilliant in the UK, like Steve Coogan or whoever, they were much worse, like, starting out than Hardy Books were, you know. And so now, you know, a year and a half ago, they were poster boys for how democratic the internet was and how anybody could do anything for very little money and stick it up there. But then now they're all on the dole or have really low-paid jobs, last time I heard, and they have no show.
They're recording the show, it's going to be on RT, you know.
They're recording a Hardy Book series, are they?
Yeah,
right.
But
right, okay. Are they
doing
research?
Like 3 weeks ago, they were recording it.
Okay,
yeah.
And are they re-recording the whole series, or are they?
No, there's other things. They've had to script it, and they've had to stick to their script, but that's never the method they used before, so they're kind of
okay, just. We're coming close to the end of the time, so I'd like to invite anybody to ask Angela anything about what she said in her talk. So is there any questions directed to Angela in particular?
Did you look at the Google statistics for the videos? Like,
No, I had a quick look at Google statistics, but there was so
just
much
the YouTube
in... No, there was so much already to deal with. I wouldn't have... It was too much. I wouldn't have been able to fit it in after all the culture and client stuff. The only bit I've seen of anything, the only time I've looked at that is when I put up one myself and I saw the statistics come in of the age profile and all these things, and the age profile, the gender, what other things people watch who like your clip or have watched your clip.
Yeah. I was just wondering if, like, when you type in feminism and you get that clip of that going around to who with the majority of people are watching, I'm going to check. You just go to them.
So you're signed in to YouTube?
You should be signed in, but it's pretty easy.
Yeah, just going back to the comments on YouTube, like, so it's, I mean, like, if you upload a video, you decide, like, what comments you want to delete, right? And, like, so if you're like Pat Kenny and you upload a video with Pat Kenny, you delete all the people who like Pat Kenny and the trenches and people that hate Pat Kenny. A lot of people tend to do that, and I suspect that with some videos that people would upload and automatically get bigger responses, it's like, because even though uploads a video online, like, you know, it's quite new for some of the, like, controversial topic, like, say, Shot City. You usually get like 9 out of 10 people giving you, like, we're not giving you views, but trying to comment, so like, positive views. You know, I don't know if there's a culture on the web for, you know, people just like, some of them are quite horrendous, because, like, some of that, like, one video actually had was uploaded and linked to a flashy site, it was like 2,000 racist comments under it, but it was obviously not able to comment under it, was racist, but whoever was administrating it, like, so it was obviously for the genders people.
The comment also shows that the person that puts up the content has responsibility for how that content is shown. Like, if you can delete comments that are negative and only need positive comments, you've done that. Also, if you put up things on Facebook, you have control over what you put up on Facebook. Like, what's missing from the discussions like this, the sense of self-determination, you have your choice of how to do this, and you have a choice of how you're seeing. Like, the question of online identity and stuff, but really, the content that you put up, you have a responsibility or control over how it's viewed or how other people will view it. And that's something that's not discussed, especially with YouTube. You can.
But it's about education as to its use afterwards, I think. A lot of people might be aware of what happens. I mean, anyone in this room will be, but a lot of people don't know what happens.
Yeah, but that's also entirely untrue when it comes to YouTube, because, like, even just what Angela just did there, was she comprised a clip of, like, lots of different things, so all you need is, like, real player downloader, it takes a couple of seconds, download the clip, then you can upload it again to a different thing, and, you know, you don't.
No, but just to do with the comments.
I know, but, like, then someone else, like, I can. You could have a clip about whatever. Like, you could be that guy with the feminist rant, you know? And I could download that, put it up, go and look at this mental, and then, like, you know, and then, you know, it's my agenda, it's different, but, like, you know, you can't control the comments that are on that when I'm saying you're mental, you know, like, we don't really have that control.
We'll just take two more comments and then maybe finish up. Eric, did you?
No, sorry.
Somebody want... Yeah, Holly?
Just thinking about what you were saying about YouTube as well, and, like, the role of women in shaping content on the internet, and thinking about, like, if we have a responsibility to create that content, and I kind of think that that's true, and thinking about, like, how conscious we are of how all this media affects us, and just when you were talking, I was thinking about how most of the complaints that I hear, or when a lot of you were talking, actually, most of the complaints I hear about, like, pictures, people's pictures being put up on Facebook, comes out of the pictures not being flattering. Not that they don't actually want the pictures to be on the internet, and thinking about how I think all these things are really, like, contributing to a social norm of what, like, our identities are and what beauty is, and, like, you can see it really clearly on Facebook, where there's, like, fan pages of, like, the best looking people on Facebook, and then ones just ripping it out of people who are, I don't know, substandard. And then there's other websites like Rate My Face, you know, and it's like the amount of teenagers who are using these as well, just like laying into each other or getting in the nip and I know themselves off. And like the comments on that as well is totally horrendous.
That's around a lot longer than Facebook though. Like that was around 99 with Hot or Not.
Yeah.
And then Goth or Not or whatever other ones that there was after that.
I have noticed too with younger people there's kind of like a Facebook face that people make which involves a kind of like that angle and a bit of couch and like one hand like this that like everyone under 18 seems to do which isn't very good for, and it has to be said more women than men seem to be doing it and doesn't really bode well. It kind of seems like women are becoming even more self-conscious about these things.
I'm interested in like why it seems like we're less likely to be open about our politics on the internet than we are to be like posting up sexy photographs of ourselves, and like the role that we have to play in
shaping that.
Yeah, I'd really like to possibly organise another discussion based more on identity issues, because I know Fionn has done really interesting work playing with those ideas, and it would be really great to have time to discuss that as well. Did you want to make a last comment?
Angela, did you compare the reaction on YouTube and other sites to feminism, to any other isms, like, say, environmentalism, capitalism, socialism, whatever?
A little bit to racism, just because when I was looking up those comedians, there were a lot of things that were called things like, you know, the top five most offensive jokes or whatever, you know, like, in offensive was being used in a flattering way in these. And a lot of those were most, it was always women, it was always anti-feminist and racist. But I mean, I didn't compare it in any more elaborate way than that.
Yeah, because my theory is that feminism gets abused just like largely just because it's political, like anything political gets abused from people who think it's all a bunch for people through eggheads or something like that.
Yeah,
probably is what they might think if they're American.
I mean, from looking up the stuff, I mean, I guess I would have a bias, but I don't think it's quite as bad. I really do think that they are a little bit harsher when it comes to feminism than anything else I've seen, you know. But I don't have, like, numbers to back that up, so I can't really
say. Okay, anybody else want to make a last comment? No? Okay, thank you very much for
This audio is a recording of a RAG meeting on new media and social media held June 14, 2010 in Shomer Spree. It looks at the uses and dangers of new media and the possibilities for positive change and radical democracy via the internet. This is part two of the talk. You'll find part one on indiemedia.ie as article 97029. The audio was recorded and edited by Andrew Flood for RAG, indiemedia.ie and the WSM website. You'll find more audio at www.wsm.ie.